Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte. This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles, just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Yeah. Hi, this is Michael Schenker, ex-Scorpions, ex-UFO, Temple of Rock, and MSG Michael Schenker Group. You are listening to Talking Metal.
Hey guys, welcome to another edition of Talking Metal. So glad to be here with you on a Sunday night drinking a Buckler imported non-alcoholic beer for once from Holland. One of my favorites of the very poor selection of non-alcoholic beers that I seem to find at my local liquor stores. Let me know your favorite. Sundays and Mondays I do not drink. I don't drink alcohol, let's put it that way. It's my 2 days off a week, and I do enjoy a non-alcoholic beer on Sundays and Mondays. This is my second one, actually, of the evening, which is just stupid because they don't get you buzzed. They just make you fat and make you want to have to go pee in the middle of the night. But, you know, whatever. I do enjoy them. A good substitute to get me through the dry Sundays and Mondays of the Mark Striegel lifestyle. Oh, wow, what an amazing guy we have on the show tonight, Michael Schenker. I've been literally sitting here, guys, for over an hour trying to decide what songs I'm going to play, and there are so many great songs that this guy has given us through his career I can't even name everything he's done, but obviously the Scorpions, UFO, Michael Schenker Group, Macaulay Schenker Group, who I saw open for Rush back in the day. I actually caught a drumstick at that show. Worcester, Massachusetts. Great, great night. Schenker followed by the one and only Rush. I think it was Roll the Bones tour for Rush. I'm not sure. So many great songs this guy has given us. Temple of Rock, that is his more recent stuff. He's put out two great records, which I believe I've spoken about on Talking Metal in the past. Anyways, Michael is here, and I'm not going to talk too much more before the interview, but he's going to tell us about Michael Schenker Tokyo Fest, which is just amazing sounding from what I've heard and the clips I've seen. It looks amazing. It's a new DVD, Blu-ray, CD collection that's coming out in late March, and Michael will tell us all about that. Again, what I've seen of it, the trailer and the clips that they sent me sound great. Matter of fact, we're going to get into one of those clips before we hear from Michael, so you'll get a chance to hear it. So, and then after that, I just got tons of great music I'm going to play for you guys. So on that note, let me just say, please support the podcast. Go write us a review on iTunes. Use our Amazon links. I know a lot of you guys shop on Amazon. Hopefully people still shop there, even though they still sell Ivanka Trump's clothing. You know, whatever. Give me a break. Amazon sells everything. So use the Amazon links. All you do is go to talkingmetal.com, click our Amazon links, and they take you right over to Amazon. You can do your shopping there. And that's about it, guys. You know, we'll come back and we'll talk some more after this Michael Schenker interview. You know, I've interviewed Michael three times. One, the first time was on this podcast, probably like almost a decade ago, and I didn't really feel like the interview went so well. I asked some stupid questions, and Michael, the connection wasn't good, and Michael didn't seem like he was in the best mood. Then I interviewed him again 2 years ago when I was working on That Metal Show. I did the backstage interviews for VH1.com, and he was just the greatest guy. We were hanging out the whole time he was there, and even after the show, he was chatting with me. Such a great, excellent guy. And that was the Michael I got on the phone this time, too. I didn't really go into the fact that I was the guy he was hanging out with on That Metal Show because I didn't want it to be about me. I wanted the interview to be about him. But what an excellent interview this is. And he was in a great mood, very talkative, lots of great stories. And yeah, man, so let's do it. Let's get into an old UFO classic. One of my personal favorite UFO songs. I mean, of course, I love Lights Out, but Dr. Doctor is a song that Michael has a co-write on. I think he wrote all the music, and I believe Phil wrote the lyrics, if I'm not mistaken. And it was the single off of the record, which of course was Phenomenon. And that record was released way the fuck back in 1974 when I was 4 years old. Unbelievable. And that's my dog moaning in the background. And the song didn't chart until 1979 when the live version kind of became somewhat of a hit. And guess what? Michael does Dr. Doctor, the UFO classic, as part of Michael Schenker Tokyo Fest. You'll get to hear it and see it live if you purchase the CD and Blu-ray. And right now we're going to play a little sound sample of the new version, the new live version by Michael Schenker of this old UFO classic. And again, this audio you're about to hear comes from the Michael Schenker Tokyo Fest package that is on the way. And Michael will tell us all about that after we hear a little sound sample, not the whole song, a little sound sample of this song. Go buy the whole song on iTunes after it is released, or just go buy the Blu-ray and DVD, and you'll love it. It's great stuff. And here we go. Dr. Doctor, followed by Mr. Michael Schenker. Thank you. Hey, it's Mark Striegel of Talking Metal and calling in on the line, the one, the only Michael Shanker. How are you, Michael?
Hi, I'm great. How are you?
Good. I'm excited because you have this new DVD, Blu-ray, and CD coming out on March 24th. It is the Michael Shanker Fest Tokyo. And I saw a teaser, I guess, a little promo of it, and it really looks incredible. One of the things that blows me away is that you got three of the classic vocalists from your career to all participate in this: Gary Barden, Graham Bonnet, and Robin McCauley. How was this? Was there any tension between the guys? Were the egos kind of left at the door?
No, I tell you, I was so pleasantly surprised. It's that they're like mates. I mean, right from the beginning, they're like mates. They're getting on like unbelievable, and they're having fun. You will see it on the side footage, and we have I made sure that there was a cameraman, filming everything. They get on excellent.
Very cool. And had you been in touch with Graham Bonnet through the years? Because I know you never really played many shows with him back in the day, if any, right?
Well, no. We did 15 minutes, and then he was gone. And
okay.
I can't remember. I saw him somewhere in the late 90s, maybe, shortly. He was supposed to sing, but he wasn't really happening. And I had him sing on something a couple of times in the past of albums that were more experimental albums, were not really pushed to the foreground.
Right.
But same with Robin, and with Gary. And so it seems like indirectly or directly over the years, it wasn't completely silent between all of us. There was always a little bit, but only just lately, say like since the beginning of 2004, maybe, there was all of a sudden a little bit of a hint of doing, having contact, but not really physically necessarily met. I think somewhere in the 90s I met Graham very briefly, and I was with him in the studio. He was singing on that concept album that I had at the time, that then was released through Holger Hübner Armageddon Records, Tales of Rock and Roll, and Graham also was already singing something on that. But we were offered a 2015 the Temple of Rock. There was our promoter in Japan had this idea, to have Graham Bonnet opening up for MSG and so for Temple of Rock.
Wow.
And then sing a couple of songs with us. And so we did that. And when that happened, that's when it clicked, when I realized, I'm playing my past music always with other singers, never original. I think it's time to do that, And
you
so
sure?
I thought if I can get Robin, Graham and Gary, that would be, all together, because, can't just get one person, you're still going to be singing the other songs by other singers. So I was thinking if I get, the whole 80s, whatever happened, Robin and Gary and Graham, the main singers together on one stage, that would be fantastic. And then I had to think about musicians, and then I thought of Steve Mann, who was with the Mikhail Shenker group. He was the guitarist, keyboard player, who actually wrote Anytime, and so he had a connection to Robin. And then Chris Glenn and Ted McKenna, they were the original rhythm section of Assault Attack with Graham, and then also the original rhythm section after Cozy Powell for behind Gary. And so I had a perfect kind of a setup, the musicians to kind of all connected, and it all made absolute sense. And we started to put things together, and rehearsed and stuff, and we had a first concept coming up was a Sweden rock, and then I had a call from Japan to headline Loud Park Festival in Japan, and they wanted me to close the show as a headliner, and then And I said, well, who's the headliner on the other day? And they said the Scorpions. I said, sorry, I can't do it.
Right.
I have to decline. The Scorpions, they're tricky guys. They might set me up or whatever. Plus, I'm staying from Rudolph away as far as I can, so I'm not going to do that. My other promoter in Japan found out about it, and he said to me, and he immediately contacted me and said, like, Michael, I want you to come to Japan and put together three concerts. And it was for the Michael Schenker Fest, which actually was the most talked about thing apart from Richie Blackmore, because he put a new band together. And so that it was those two things, you know. And
right.
So I said, okay. And they booked Osaka and Tokyo and Sapporo. And, you know, Tokyo sold out immediately. And I went like, wow, this is like Budokan all over again.
Sure.
And that's when I decided, you know, I saw the concert, the Tokyo place, unbelievable place, you know, so beautiful and clean and shiny and big stage. And, you know, I mean, I said, like, you know, I have to pre-finance this. So I arranged everything, you know. I got camera crew for the whole thing, camera man for site footage, you know, behind the scenes stuff, and the photographer making pictures. And then we put a really nice package together. And the show itself was unbelievable right from the beginning, you know. The first note was the intro, which is the beginning of an instrumental song I did, In Search of Peace of Mind, you know. It's right from the very beginning, you know.
Wow.
It's, you can feel the vibration, unbelievable. And and between all of us, you know, the fans and us on stage, and it was just fantastic, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm so happy that I recorded that, because, you know, I mean, my gut feeling told me, you know, don't even ask anybody, just do it. And
right,
and that's what I did. I didn't even care. Yeah.
And how long ago did this take place? Was it about a year ago or so?
Well, we did this concert. When did August? Must have been August we played
August,
there.
Okay.
It was really hot.
Right.
It was really hot. And then I was spending all this time, you know, doing edits and the way, you know, I wanted it to be edited. The Japanese already did a great job, but, you know, there's a certain way you want to, you know, what you want people to see. I mean, everybody's got a different taste, but I know what I want.
Right.
To people to see. And then also the way the sound, you know, I had to make sure it was mixed the way I saw it, and we did. And it turned out really good.
Yeah, no, the clips I heard sound just awesome. And we're actually going to preview a little clip here in a bit on Talking Metal. But, you know, the crowd just seems so into it in the clips I've seen. And you obviously have fans just all over the world. But, you know, Japan has always been a special place for MSG fans, you know. And what is it about the people in Japan that they relate so well to your music, and there's such a connection between you and them? What is it about Japan?
Yeah, it's because like that, you know. When I left Germany, because they didn't understand the art of lead guitar, and they didn't understand the music I was playing, and that's why I went to England. And I never made it to Japan in my whole development, all the way up to Strangers in the Night and Love Drive, and then opened the door for America for the Scorpions, and then I left the scene. And then I wanted to do something small. Peter Mensch was looking for me and wanted to do something big, so he's the one who sent me to Japan. And then it was like an explosion, you know. And my hardcore fans around the world, they understand the art of lead guitar playing, and with pure self-expression, you know. That's what I do, the art of lead guitar playing with pure self-expression. And so, you know, the first part of my life, I created something in the 70s that was copied by other musicians in the 80s. Wolf called me up from America, said, Michael, they're all playing your guitar style here. I said, you must be joking. I never did anything on purpose or plan anything. I was just having fun playing. So I established something that when I was 23 years old, after Strangers in the Night, I saw what it was like up on the top. And I decided it wasn't for me, and I wanted to have peace and experiment with music. It was the Japanese. They followed me through my whole experimental career.
Wow.
As if it was the best thing in the world, you know? And so they are I mean, like I said, my hardcore fans around the whole world do understand what I'm doing. That's why they are there.
Sure.
But it's just there is more of them in Japan that do understand. And there are more in Japan, in a big way that connect with that. But it has all become full cycle. It's all back to the days of Strangers in the Night. You know, it's all back to, we just did a DVD in Spain where people got completely crazy, you know, just like Japan, but they sing ole ole instead of, you know, doing what the Japanese do, and they have their own way of celebrating.
Yeah.
And it got an award in Germany and just got an award in Japan. That Temple of Rock album, On a Mission in Madrid, that was 9 months ago, 11 months ago when it was released. And so it's taking off. We have already with Temple of Rock, we played 4 years. We are going down in storm, you know, so like, the whole world is cycled, going full cycle. We are back at the Budokan time, and that's what it reminds me of when we went to Japan for this recording.
Right.
And we are basically back to that era of, in a spiral way, you know. It's not exactly the same, but similar. It's like this, that spiral development, forward motion. We are kind of, the cycle is closing, and I feel like I'm back in that same era, where I was at the time with the Budokan and Scorpions Love Drive and Strangers in the Night. That all happened together in a period of 2 years, you know? And I feel this is exactly where the energy is again. It's like people around the whole world. And I think, you know, I'm in the third stage of my life. You know, the middle years was just experimenting, learning about life. And 2008, I came back, and that's, I'm carrying on now, where I stopped, after Love Drive, when I, you know, started my middle life, which the black and white guitar marks that era.
Right.
And now I'm in the place back where I consciously can enjoy what and carry on what I finished, at my first stage of my life with Strangers in the Night. So
right.
I feel like I'm in exactly the same place. And so many people dying and stuff, you know, and I'm, you know, using this third stage of my life as a celebration, as Michael Schenker says.
That's great.
I'm celebrating the era of handmade rock, you know, 40 years of AC/DC, the same thing over and over. People have now are educated, and many people are like, many people understand today something that they didn't understand 40, 50 years ago. And so now I think people dig a little deeper and they start to understand the art of lead guitar a little bit more, or actually they want a little bit more depth and details, because otherwise, how long can you do the oompa oompa?
Right.
You have to kind of get to the next level at some point. So I think we are getting, you know, it's almost like a, you know, like a re-experience, like a cow, you know, eats and then spits out and eats again. It's, you need to digest, you know, what has been put out there. And I put something out there in the 70s that was commercialized in the 80s, and then the 80s guys made the money with it and stuff like that. But I'm an artist. I can be happy under the bridge. No problem. And so I'm a trend maker rather than a trend follower.
Right.
And, so the people, you know, they just kind of, anyway, so that's what happened. And that's why it seems like now full cycle, and we are back in this
exciting time, really
somewhere in that period, the late 70s and beginning of 80s.
Right. That's awesome to hear. And again, we are talking about your new DVD, Blu-ray, and CD, which comes out on March 24th. It's the Michael Schenker Fest, Tokyo. We can't wait for that. And I also, you mentioned Temple of Rock. You guys have released some great music in the recent years. I was a big fan of the Spirit on a Mission CD that came out probably about 2 years ago at this point. What is the status of that Michael Schenker project, the Temple of Rock?
Yeah, I love it, you know. I mean,
you're going to do more?
Doogie, you know. Absolutely. Dugi and I, we are building this thing, you know. Dugi and I, we have a really, really great chemistry, and I love working with him and the ideas he comes up and he hears what I have, and he comes up with four or five different things, you know, and we pick and stuff like that. It's just fun with him, you know. He keeps calling me up and says, Michael, when are we going to do the next record? But, you know, the thing is, I had in mind, you know, to do a 2017, but I had no idea that the Michael Schenker Fest would take so long. You know, we are getting offers from America for the Michael Schenker Fest, from Europe, wow, and from everywhere, you know. And so we are already booking tour for Europe and UK for October, November, and we are already starting America for February and March.
Wow.
And so, you know, and now we need to figure time goes by, I'm realizing I did 4 years solid touring with Temple of Rock. We did two live DVDs, CDs, and we did two studio albums, you know, and my ears are still ringing from the last concert.
Yeah.
And so we did on a mission in Madrid, the live DVD, which is superb. You know, it's really, really fantastic atmosphere and great fun, and I personally think, the more I think about it, it's too early. 2017, 2018
sure
is a better time
for Temple
and Rock. You know, that's going to be the third album, and that will make it very close to Dugi standing on his own feet, and he doesn't need to sing my old classics anymore, and just some of them maybe.
Right.
But it's a completely its own entity.
Sure.
You know, it's by then we have a classic, and can you imagine when we did the fourth album? I think then, you know, it's going to be so established. It's going to be just a thing on its own, you know, that
right
can tour the world without, you know, without actually having to deal with anything from my old days. But we always will put something in there, you know. I mean, right, I'm not going to stop playing Rock Bottom.
Now you mentioned so, Michael Schenker, you know, Fest doing UK dates and possibly even US dates. What would we expect to see? Would you be bringing out like Gary Graham and Robin on that
the
tour?
Yeah, the Michael Schenker Fest.
Wow, okay, that's
exactly
awesome.
Exactly the
that's
same
awesome
thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's of course a much bigger undertaking, costs much more money, but we got bigger promoter and bigger venues, and so everything is kind of going to a complete new level, you know. But that's why it's taking so long. That's why October, you know, I go like, right, wow, man, so long. I used to promote tours in 1 month and show up, you know, but now it's like people want a half a year, or maybe even a year if possible. That's okay, but, you know, we're sitting together with a record company figuring out what the next record is going to be, and we want to make sure we are not, you know, doing, you know, having too much product out, and so, you know, figuring out the timing of everything and stuff like that. So, and, you know, I'll probably end up doing more than one thing, which, you know, I'm used to anyway, and, you know, I just did. I'm doing it anyway. You know, I have just done a year ago with Gary Barden. We did Barcelona, fantastic gig,
right,
and we're doing one with Robin McCauley in May in Madrid, and
cool,
then we're doing the Michael Schenker Fest in Balingen, and then you know, in October we already start in the Michael Schenker Fest with Graham, Gary, and Robin, and then we in Europe, and then we're going to in the next year February, March to the States and do the same thing. But of course,
great,
we're going to be always developing and changing little bits here and little bits there, so that people can't say, well, I've seen it all. No, you haven't. Because there's so much material, you know, sometimes people go like, oh, why didn't they play this? Why didn't they play that? But eventually we'll play everything.
Awesome. Awesome. Hey, I wanted to go way back to your first solo record that you did back in 1980, which was really a game-changing record. I thought it was so good and such a big fan of it to this day. I wanted to ask you about your relationship with Roger Glover on that album, and if you had any memories of working with him. Are they good memories, bad memories? What do you remember about that record, specifically Roger?
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, fantastic guy. I mean, fantastic guy, really down to earth, and he loves my playing, and you know, I mean, I was a hot tip at that time. It's like everybody in Rainbow, you know, was going, almost going to join me. he was like that, you know, like Don Airey and Cozy Powell, and then you know, it was just like Graham Bonnet. They all wanted to come over to join my side. But, you know, and Roger Glover, of course, he knew that this was something hard. And I didn't want to do anything big, you know. I don't know if I told you that before, but when I finished with the opening the doors for Scorpions for America, I was done. I wanted to, you know, do little things and experiment and just be an artist, you know,
right.
and have fun and no pressure and do things when and what. But Peter Mensch, he was... He found me and he wanted to do big things with me, you know. And so it took me another 10 years, you know, until I escaped to Arizona in the early 90s for 15 years when I found my peace eventually.
Yeah.
But, you know, when Peter Mensch was gone, David Kress started following me around. It never stopped, you know.
Wow.
And so, but Roger Glover was the guy who... was, you know, chosen by everybody. I mean, the next record, actually, the second, I was supposed to have Matt Langer, and I said, no, I don't want to sound like AC/DC, so
wow.
I decided for Ron Nevison.
Right. And then after,
but
after
Glover
that...
was fun.
I was going to say, then after that, you were working with Martin Birch, too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That was fun too. I mean, he made a great album. He actually became musician's favorite, I saw that type, you know? And, you know, so that's how it went.
Very good. Now, I saw some great footage and actually saw you live when you were on That Metal Show. I was there and you came out and you jammed with Kirk Hammett. Amazing. And then I saw some more footage that he joined you at a club a little bit after that, or a gig somewhere you guys were playing again. How did you get to know Kurt Hammett? And just wondering what the story behind that connection is.
Yeah, it's kind of strange because Kirk, I can't remember who told me that. I think it could have been Peter Mensch, that I am like Father Christmas for Kirk.
Right.
But Kirk was always too shy to approach me, and he always wanted to, you know. And we actually bumped into each other, but took him by surprise. He may have not known that I was going to be showing up there, which was a magazine where the 10 most influential guitarists, you know,
right.
For some reason, Billy Sheehan as a bass player was there too, but the rest was lead guitarists. And we all ended up together on the front cover, and the most influential guitarists, you know, and Kirk was there. And, but he really did not say much. I think he was happy to get out of there and because he was nervous in front of me. And, which I can understand, but because when you have people like it's a different generation, 10 years younger probably, and you know, for me it would be with something like Jimmy Page and stuff like that, you
sure.
know. So I kind of can understand the respect and stuff like that, and but you know, eventually I think he took the bull by the horns and he said to Peter, I want to do something with Michael, and so and I think between Eddie Trunk was one of the main, yeah. I think between those three, they put this together, and it was fun, you know. It was he finally had the courage to put this together, and so he's just a fanatic fan, you know. He's just an amazing fan. And when I told him, Kirk, you know, I mean, what I developed in the 70s, I did that unconsciously. He said, what are you talking about? You must be joking. It's like I didn't do anything, honestly. I didn't plan to I did not plan to become famous and successful and have an impact, you know, like that on the rest of the world. I was just having fun playing guitar. That's the beauty about it, you know. It just kind of that it went that way. It's a kind of really interesting, and it's a good place to be in, you know. I can that is the reward for a real artist, you know. They have that peace within themselves that nobody can take either, and you know, you don't have to do anything. Like I said before, you can be happy under a bridge, you know, like the painters, you know, they're just happy painting. They're just, I don't know, there's something going on just like that in the now that money can't buy.
What drew you to the guitar back in the very early days? Were there players that you wanted to be like, that you idolized, or was it just an attraction to the actual instrument?
No, it was like, you know, I was always music, sound, always for me, you know. I mean, 3 years old, I was singing, and I love to sing harmonies, banging. I have a really good sense of rhythm. I love to bang on things. And when I was 5 years old, there was a little, you know, I was playing with cooking pots, and then there was a piano standing there. I would fiddle on that, and there was a violin. My dad is a hobby. He was, you know, but, you know, and not, it was all great, but nothing really yet. That was that exciting until I was 9 years old and there was a guitar standing in the room. And Rudolf and I start playing at the same time, you know. And So I developed so fast, I started teaching Rudolf guitar. And, you know, and then basically, what was the question again?
I was just wondering, like, what influences, you know, drew you to the guitar in the first place.
And that was it. So when I start, when that guitar was standing there, and I went like, I hit this string, and we were listening to music and had pictures on the wall and everything, but there was guitar standing there, and that was the beginning, you know. I hit one note, and I put my other finger on another and hit the note, and right there, even without distortion, it already sounded like something that reminded me of what I was hearing on the radio, I guess. And it's just kind of, I never stopped, you know, looking for the next note.
And were you self-taught, or did you take lessons, or just?
Yeah, you know, it's just like one note inspired me to play the next note.
Right.
And the next note inspired me to play the next note. And it never stopped, you know. And I call it a play and discover. It's not really like practicing or anything. It's just kind of, you just play, you're having fun, but you're discovering step by step. As you're having fun, you start discovering, you know, you're finding treasures, you know. I call it treasure hunting. You find pieces of gold. And I'm doing exactly the same thing today.
It's awesome.
You know, but, you know, the latest, and so when I got hooked to the guitar, that's when I, you know, and no music sounded for me complete unless there was a great lead guitarist in that song.
Right.
And so I started when I was 14, 15, you know, in the late 60s, I started to, I went like guitarist hunting. I went to festivals hoping that I would, you know, see something amazing and stuff like that. And I did, you know, here and there. And then when I was 17, you know, I basically, I intuitively knew that enough of the, you know, copying others and no more listening to music. You know, I knew that I had reached the point where I wanted to do it the way I see it. And that means going within myself and do pure self-expression. I started that with 17, and that's what I focused on. So I never really copied others long enough to create groove that I couldn't jump out of. So I started very early to create my own grooves, and you know, and as a result of, you know, just focusing on how you see it, you create your own style, and that's what I did in the 70s, and then in the 80s it was copied and commercialized, and then it was more acceptable for the wider audience.
Right, definitely. Well, again, we are talking with Michael Schenker, and there is a new DVD, Blu-ray, and CD on the way on March 24th. It's Michael Schenker Fest Tokyo. It's great stuff. We're going to have it linked through today's show notes on talkingmetal.com. Michael, always a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you very much.
Oh,
Big thanks to Michael Schenker for joining me. That song right there, of course, On and On. I mean, if you don't know Michael Schenker Group, go listen to their stuff. There's so many great songs. Are You Ready to Rock? I mean, that record right there, the second Michael Schenker Group record had so many great songs on it. I love the first one, too, which had one of my all-time favorite songs by him, Lost Horizons. And, you know, as much as I love UFO, I don't really love UFO all that much. Everything I know by them, I think, is great, and I have a few of their records. But to me, it was the Michael Schenker Group stuff that was the stuff that really made me just go crazy over Michael Schenker's playing. And I have to admit, I'm very impressed with the Temple of Rock stuff that he's done in more recent years. So do yourself a favor. If you don't know his catalog, definitely go check it out. You know, you can start, like I said, that song, Lost Horizons is a great song. Captain Nemo, which came off the Built to Destroy record, which was great. Rock My Nights Away is also on that record. Of course, the Assault Attack record is great. Desert Song, awesome. The live record is very good. One Night in Budokan, Attack of the Mad Axeman is on that. Victim of Illusion, Into the Arena, another great song. So much great stuff Michael Schenker has given us through the years, not to mention the work he did with the Scorpions also. So, having said that, let's do a couple more Schenker tracks right now. I got a lot of stuff I want to play for you guys tonight. Let's do this song right here that's playing underneath me is Captain Nemo. We'll do a little of that right now. Captain Nemo, definitely essential Michael Schenker right there. And I can't wait to see this thing. I want it to come to the U.S. I think it's going to be amazing. I didn't know Michael Schenker Fest was going to be coming to the U.S. So learned about that for the first time during that interview that Michael gave me, recorded less than a week ago today. So let's keep the music going right now. This is a song which came out, you know, a couple years before the thrash metal hit. And a lot of people point to this song as not the song that invented thrash, but definitely one of the key elements. And it wasn't the record Restless and Wild. It was specifically this song off of that record by Accept called Fast as a Shark that seemed to be a key element in the birth of thrash. Again, it wasn't the one prototype thing that caused the whole thrash movement, but definitely an extremely important piece. This song by Accept from 1982, Fast as a Shark. Little Accept, classic Accept here on Talking Metal. Wow, having fun here tonight, hanging with you guys, drinking non-alcoholic beer, and not watching the Oscars. It's Sunday night. So let's keep this going. This is Some Kind of Monster by Metallica. It comes from a controversial record called Saint Anger. It didn't have any guitar solos. They brought the, you know, they let the whole band write lyrics, which was controversial, instead of just Hetfield. And they got a lot of shit for the snare drum sound on Saint Anger. Little known fact, they released an EP when they did a movie called Some Kind of Monster. Now, Some Kind of Monster was also a song off of the album Saint Anger. But when they did this movie, they put out an EP entitled Some Kind of Monster to kind of go along with this movie, which is a documentary about them dealing with their kind of issues that they had at this time. I don't know what year. I think it's 2002. I imagine the documentary was shot because it's kind of about the, you know, making of this record. And anyways, on this EP, they did an edited version, shorter version of the song, Some Kind of Monster. It was 3 minutes, maybe even 4 minutes shorter than the version of the song that appeared on Saint Anger. And they changed the snare drum sound on this. They got rid of that ringy cowbelly sounding snare drum. And it's quite good. I mean, I really like this version of the song. They cut out the fat. They got rid of that annoying snare drum sound. And it's good. This is sounds like classic Metallica to me. You know, it's not, obviously, it's not Ride the Lightning Metallica or Master of Puppets, but it sounds like Metallica. It sounds like it's in their wheelhouse. It's their thing. I dig it. This is the edited version and remixed version, totally remixed, fixed snare drum version of the song Some Kind of Monster by Metallica.
The fears that swing overhead, these are the weights that hold you down.
little Metallica here on Talking Metal. Let's keep it going with Marilyn Manson off the Hollywood record. This is The Fight Song. Guys, thanks so much for joining me on this edition of Talking Metal. Big thanks to Michael Shanker. Thanks to Chip for setting up that interview. I got up at 7 in the morning to record Michael calling in from Europe, I guess, maybe Germany. I don't know where he was calling in from. And he never called. So I actually got up at like 6:30, snuck down in the basement, never called. We rescheduled. I was glad that we were able to finally connect on Saturday. So scheduling it a little mix up there, but just a pleasure to talk with him. What a nice guy. I'll post a picture of me and Michael Shanker from 2015 in today's show notes. That's also where you go to get the links. And if you want to send me a PayPal donation, my PayPal account is my email, striegelmark@gmail.com. You can send me an email there. You can send me a PayPal donation using that, striegelmark@gmail.com. Cool. All right, guys, and you please, again, leave a review on iTunes and just visit the site. That helps us, too. We're doing On This Day all the time, you know, so if you want to see what historical metal hard rock event happened on a certain day, go to our site. And we got news going, Mitch LaFon's podcast, this podcast, Metal Raps. It's a very active site compared to what it used to be, where we just basically used to use it to post podcasts. It's more than that now, so definitely check out TalkingMetal.com. And on that note, we're going to end with some more Michael Shanker. This is, I got the CD right here. I'm looking at it. This is off the 2008 CD, which was called In the Midst of Beauty, MSG, Michael Shanker Group. Gary Barden back in the fold for this one. Listen to the lineup on this. Don Airey, who known for his work with Ozzy. Neil Murray, played, of course, with Whitesnake, among many others. Simon Phillips, wow. And of course, Michael Schenker on guitar. Great stuff. What a lineup on this one. And this is a song off of that record called I Want You. Thanks for listening to Talking Metal. Tell your friends about us. Follow us on Twitter. It's Talking Metal. And check us out on Snapchat. Talking Metal for You is the username. See you guys. Emily, my wife, runs that account for the most part. Sometimes I hop on there. All right. See you later, guys.
The sight of each other through and through. I've never been so frightened. The God's honest truth. When you fix me with those eyes, I got everything to lose. See, I've got your number tattooed on my heart. It will stay forever here. Never will it part. As long as you remember the promises you made, once they are forgotten.